Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 282 of the Roguecast, recorded December 31st, 2019. Best of 2019, Part 2.
All right, welcome back to Part 2 of our Best of 2019. We spent some time working this out, and of course we want to bring Anna in on this, and so Dave is not on this episode. It is just me, Nick, and Anna, and we're going to talk. We've killed Dave, although he will be back next week for part three, which is weird.
I mean, well, there's resurrection spells.
Oh, are we living on Krakoa? Is that what the deal is?
Yes. Oh, yes. I'll get in contact with the five. Fine.
What did I make that blood magic spell for then? I was binding Dave's soul to the store so he could still work here. He's just not alive.
Oh. Well, now there's going to be two of them.
I was going to say there were two Daves.
There's multi-Daves. So what we did, the same thing we did last time. We all had top tens.
Yep.
And we went through looking for consensus picks. Nick and Anna and I had exactly one consensus pick that we're going to start with.
Yeah.
And then Nick and Anna had, I believe, one or two other consensus picks. Yeah, a couple. And then Anna's got a bunch of stuff she's going to hit us with at the end.
Yeah.
So, because Anna reads a bunch of stuff that we don't necessarily read.
It's true. I like good comics, for example.
Knew that was coming.
I'm sorry. I mean, you guys like good comics, too, I assume. I don't know. I've never read any of them. But...
And you've never listened to the podcast.
I've listened to the episodes of the podcast that I can hear you guys say my name through the door.
We're just going to say your name midway through every podcast. Anna! Oh, I just got to listen.
I mean, maybe I will. I would have to hear it through the door.
Oh, that's
so
true.
It'd have to be loud enough.
That's true. We'll just yell it like...
Oh, we can make it loud. I'll buy a megaphone.
It'll be our new sign. We're going to change our sign-off in 2020. It's not going to be Yo-Jo anymore. It's going to be Anna!
Oh, okay. So then I'll have to listen to every episode of the podcast.
Yeah, it just turns out we only mention your name at the very end.
You didn't give it any qualifiers.
You're right, I didn't. And I guess I've trapped myself into this now, so...
You're trapped just like Dave's soul is trapped at the store.
You're absolutely correct.
All right, let's start with the comic that we all really like, and the one that I came to late, and that is Die from Image Comics by Kieran Gillen and Stephanie Hans?
Yeah, Stephanie Hans.
You guys were both on board this from the very beginning.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Issue 1 came out in 2018.
I thought issue 1 was okay. And then the second issue kicked ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And I didn't read until the trade, and I thought reading it in trade really helped. And now I'm reading it in single issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so this is a book of, basically it's described as Goth Jumanji.
Yep, that is the quick one.
Or the D&D cartoon. Mm-hmm. And it is basically a group of friends. Well, Nick, you pitch it.
I think the Goth Jumanji is sort of what it is. It's a group of friends who, at a birthday party... a friend has created a Dungeons and Dragons world for them to actually visit and go in, and then they get stuck there, and bad things happen, and good
horrible.
Things happen, and they make new friends, and you know, friends in quotation marks. That's fine. They create enemies.
Yeah.
And the first trade is sort of getting to know that world a little bit and knowing the characters a little bit, and then the single issues after that have been kind of expanding the world, but also kind of injecting the notion that maybe that world was there before the friend decided to create it, in quotation marks. And it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kieran Gillen in general, so even after reading the first issue, I was totally willing to at least give it a few more issues, but like, the thing that I like most about it is like the level of it feels very familiar as a D&D-like setting, but it has its own spin that, like, makes it really feel like its own thing. Like, the Grief Knight and the... Mm-hmm. I can't remember what her name is. The rogue with the fey coins.
Oh, the mage? No.
She's like the cyberpunk.
The cyberpunk,
which is interesting.
Yeah. Which is funny, because that's not something
with
that normally...
the fey gold.
Yeah, intersects with D&D, but...
But throwing in the little cyberpunk bit was really interesting.
Yeah. And, like, the whole thing makes it feel... like super interesting. It's definitely a world I want to play. I don't want to be in it because I don't
want to
lose my arm or have a hole blown in my chest or whatever.
Right, or whatever emotional damage gets done. Yeah.
Oh no, emotional damage is secondary to not having an arm. But it's definitely a world that I would love to play tabletop of.
And there is a way because they did a free PDF.
You're not wrong. It's why I bought the trade, even though I bought all the single issues.
But. I think we all really enjoy this book and highly recommend it. I've pitched a bunch of people. It's a $10 trade.
Yeah.
And everybody picks it up is like, oh, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Nick, talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. Donny Cates is one of the...
So, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy has always been a property that I've loved ever since Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning kind of
created
the newer version and iteration with Rocket and Groot.
Right, originally it was set in the year 3001 and with all these crazy...
And it had people like Vance Astro and Yondu.
And Charlie 27.
And Charlie 27. Let us not forget Charlie 27.
Never forget.
This, Donny Cates kind of revitalized it a little bit, or I guess not maybe revitalized, but added to the chaos.
It feels like he did a little bit of what Bendis did with Avengers, where it's like everybody cosmic is a guardian because there's this big giant threat.
Yeah,
because
it opens up with like Gladiator and Silver Surfer and Beta Ray Bill, and the main story that opens up is Thanos is dead, and they're reading his will, and craziness occurs through that. And it was a great opening story arc that had a lot of avenues to explore, fun action pieces, great characters. He even threw in his own Cosmic Ghost Rider, because why not at this point? Yeah. The sort of second half of the book was, because it did end just last week, or no, 2 weeks ago at this point, or maybe 3 weeks
ago. With issue 12. Yeah.
With issue 12, it was a story against the Church of Universal Truth.
There's and it been was a thorn in the side of the Guardians since the very beginning.
And this was sort of like, maybe like a future version of them that is basically trying to stop death, but like utilizing everyone's energy to create this mega weapon. So he was turning a lot of people against each other, and it ended up being kind of a ragtag team versus this big villain, which felt very comic booky and cool and fun. And Rocket Raccoon was wearing a giant mech suit because he was dying. And that was the only thing sustaining his life. So, I mean, a weaponeer, he's essentially an engineer at this point, because he builds crap, and he built himself a giant mech suit, and it was fun, and now Groot talks instead of saying, "I am Groot," he actually has a voice.
That's super weird to me.
It was weird, but I kind of got to like it a little bit, because while Groot was very one-dimensional and is cute in the movies, because he, you know, there's interaction, having him his own voice kind of gives him a bit more character.
And a lot more agency, I would assume.
Yeah, a little bit more agency. I agree. So. I don't know. And I forget who's doing the artwork, but I enjoyed the art, but it was mainly Donny Cates' story and sort of the level of fun and action that he was able to kind of inject into it. It was just made it a lot of interesting.
Right.
The team that he introduces in the first arc, like, I think it's Beta Ray Bill, Moon Dragon, Vila Vell, and I guess Quill is there, and Groot.
Yep.
Maybe there's more. I don't remember. It's been
Gamora.
A while. Yeah. Do they carry over into the second arc, or does the team expand, or does it contract?
No. Sort of contracts a little bit, because a lot of people are taken off the board pretty quickly.
Okay.
But ultimately, it is still the core Guardians, which...
Okay. That's pretty cool.
There's even a fun callback to the old school Drax that Randy and I kind of grew up with.
Yeah. All right, let's jump over and talk about Teen Titans by Adam Glass. So I was looking up some... So this started last year with a special and issue 20.
Mm-hmm.
And starting this year, they did issue 26 up through, I guess, 38. So so there's been a pretty big chunk this year. But I was looking into Adam Glass. I didn't know if you know this, and I hate to... I don't want to break your heart if this is the...
Oh, no, I know he worked on Supernatural.
Okay. No, I mean, do you know that he's ending his run?
What?
Yeah. So, I just saw, as I was looking up, 39 is his final issue. It's in shops in February. Because he's going to run a show on Netflix, because he's a TV writer.
Well, it better be a good show on Netflix, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is like the comic I have the most nice things to say about.
Yeah.
And that's rare for me.
I know. So I was looking up to find out info about
it. Why do you have to stop her?
And I was like, oh, this is disappointing. But that's a solid run. That's like,
it is.
That's like a... I mean, we talked about earlier, like 12 or 13 issues is a good solid run for them.
Yeah.
This is longer than that. He's going to run 20 to 39.
Yeah, it's easily double any other series that I've liked half as much as this.
So talk about Teen Titans and what it was we liked about it this year.
So, I think what, like, really hooked me was they did a special, like, I believe at the top of the year, that focused around just the character Crush.
Yeah.
Who is, like, my favorite character that I have read about in a comic since I was, like, 15.
Yeah.
She's super cool. She's a badass. She's the daughter of Lobo, who, again, another one of my longstanding favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
So this special featured her and centered around her backstory. And that's what sort of drew me into the series. And I went and I backread all the stuff from the previous year up until that point. And I've been following it on an issue-to-issue basis ever since then.
Right.
And it's got, like, a mostly new team. I think at least half of them are brand new characters.
Remind me, this is the one that basically Damian handpicked.
Yeah.
And he is, like, the runner of it, sort of.
Yeah, and Damian is in charge of the team, so the team does not always have the best direction, given that Damian's moral compass is busted at the best of times.
I mean, it's, you know, it's always pointing north somewhere.
Yeah, it's just, I guess it depends on where north is at any given point in time. But yeah, so Damian's, he's handpicked a group of people who he can use effectively, which does not sound like the kind of thing that a team leader should do. But, like, the book is, like, about these, like, relationships growing and, like, the characters interacting and characters that you would originally assume are just silly throwaway characters with a bit, like, sort of gaining agency and falling into their own as superheroes.
Yeah.
And, like, sort of, like, with any, I guess, book featuring teen superheroes, there's, like, a near constant conflict over, like, method and attitude and personality, and everyone, it seems, is fighting at least at some point.
Yep.
Which, I guess, drives character interaction and, like, development. But they always manage to come together in the end, which is what I think is great. Like, it has a very soap opera-like quality to it, that I guess probably you could say about a lot of the other things that I've seen Adam Glass work on in the past as far as TV is concerned.
Yeah.
So, definitely it is my favorite book that I've read. Everything else that I have enjoyed, be it like As Guardians of the Galaxy or West Coast Avengers, has generally ended after, like, you know, 12 issues.
Right. So this one no longer run.
Yeah. So this was something to, like, hang on to, and it, I don't know, it takes itself seriously, it doesn't make too many self-referential jokes, they're never making fun of the fact that they're a comic book. It's like every single character, even if they are silly within the confines of, like, the book itself, or, like, I guess in the confines of what we think of as silly in reality, yeah, they're never depicted as a joke in the
This source. Is your straightforward superhero
book. Yeah, this is, like, the, I don't know, like, it's campy, but, like, it knows it's campy, and it embraces that.
Okay, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
All right, people are probably waiting for this one because, of course, it's going to turn up a lot of best of lists. Why don't you guys talk about House of X, Powers of X, and the X-Men titles that have followed?
So yeah, House of X and Powers of X. Basically, the X-Books have kind of died in a lot of ways. I mean, they're not died, but they're losing a little bit of energy, and I forget who was writing them before.
Well, so X-Men Gold was basically, and X-Men Blue and all that, that was basically a throwback to the 80s X-Men.
Mm-hmm. And then they did a 12-issue filler.
Uncanny X-Men, that was Matthew Rosenberg.
Felt
like a throwback to the 90s in the same way. And then it felt like basically all of that was a sort of a, hey, let's look back before they look forward again with House of X and Power of X.
Yeah, but House of X and Power of X, Jonathan Hickman comes in and basically says, let's revitalize things to a point where it's something different.
Yeah, and it's definitely very different.
Yeah, and created a 12-issue miniseries that kind of jumped back and forth in time through different eras, basically it ended up being lives.
Yeah.
Of a certain character. And how the X-Men kind of lived, breathed, died, changed, and ultimately is trying to be a different thing than it has been before. Which is an interesting mission statement for the X-Men, because, I mean, they're always mutants, they've always been on the outskirts. And it's been a blast.
Yeah, I think so. I've never been a huge fan of X-Men leading up until this, but one of the things that, like, really pulled me into this was that Hickman's mission statement, it seemed, moving forward after this miniseries and during this miniseries, was to, like, sort of, like, just smash stuff up and make it different. Mm. And it is a very different, so much so that I think some people who are old-school fans probably are a little off-put by how different it is.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
I pointedly look at Randy. But, like, that's kind of what I like about it. It doesn't seem like just a monument to the repetition of comic books. It doesn't seem like it's trying to fuel sales with nostalgia. It seems like it's actually trying to create the point in time that future generations will look back on when they think about the comics from their youth.
Well, and it's been vastly successful in that. It's been a big, big hit. I know you guys are really liking the current books. I know specifically that, Anna, you really like Marauders.
Oh, yeah, it's delightful. It's the most fun book that I've read for Marvel in forever.
And that's Jerry Duggan.
Yeah. Yep.
And they're doing Pirates.
They're pirates. Yes. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, Kitty Pryde, for some reason, cannot use the Krakoan gates that allows them to travel wherever.
Yeah.
So she becomes the Red Queen.
Yeah.
Which is a member of the Hellfire Club.
Mm-hmm.
Because all mutants are now mutants. They're no longer heroes and villains. There's no bad or good. They are sort of one entity.
Yeah.
And that includes, like, Magneto, Apocalypse.
Yeah. Sebastian Shaw. Anyone who's ever been
Mr. Sinister.
Bad.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me.
It is weird, but I like it. I like the whole, let's forget our troubles, let's forget the animosity. Even though some of that doesn't make a ton of sense, since Apocalypse and all these people have killed, like, thousands upon thousands of people.
Yep.
Themselves include, I mean, they've killed, like, friends and stuff. Like, how does Archangel work with Apocalypse? That doesn't really
make
sense.
You're not wrong, but I think at least, like, from an outside, like, I guess, like, from the position of a person who has lived a life that is often, like, alluded to or used as a metaphor with the X-Men books, like, I think it's super refreshing that rather than, like, the analogs for the minority characters that are the X-Men, instead of, like, fighting each other over methods of how to, like, be appreciated by society, they're working together against bad people.
Yeah.
Which I think is something I've talked about in the past, but, like, the villains in this book are, not to get too political with it, but they're universally people who hate mutants. They're people who don't want them around. They're people who don't want to, like, recognize their political sovereignty and agency as people. And so, like, I, for one, am very excited to see Magneto and Charles sitting at the same table.
Yeah, metaphorically speaking, I really do like that metaphor. It's just that there's a thing that makes it sort of more, if you fall in with the villains, are you all now villains? And it's less hopeful and more realistic. And I always like my superhero comics a little more hopeful and less realistic.
Yeah,
but it may not be time for that. And honestly, it does feel like this feels like of a piece with our modern era. This feels like it belongs in the modern era.
Well, Hickman is not shying away from that conversation. I mean, there's definitely a lot of stories to tell, telling the tales of, do we get along with each other and how do we do this? I mean, in Excalibur, I think Gambit is like, how the hell can I freaking work with Apocalypse?
Is it
the worst possible person?
The worst person.
So, I mean, the infighting is still there, but it's sort of the unit. It's not
rather,
the main thing.
I was going to say, rather than, like, having a knockdown, drag-out fight, it's like they're processing how to work with each other. How do I get over what this person has done to me in the past now that we are on the same team?
Yeah.
It's not, how do I work against this person? How do I stop this person from stopping me?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right. And now we're seeing sort of the villains, like, in the main X-Men book right now, there's, like, the group of elderly women that are
super weird, but
trying to take over the world using, like, the elements of Krakoa.
Yeah,
and
stealing their secrets from, I guess, like, how Krakoa works. Because that's all under wraps in the book
right
now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. So they're such a strange villain.
But it also is all familial. I mean, a lot of it deals with the Summers Clan and how they get along and how it interacts with Wolverine and Emma Frost and the sort of the relationships that they've cultivated over years and years and years.
Yeah.
And
which is a thing that I do like, because whereas in the past, like, Cyclops' relationship with Emma and also with Jean and also with anyone else who he's had a relationship with, they're too many to count.
Yeah, we, like, haven't seen Madeline yet.
We haven't. But, like, those are things that you, if you want to write Cyclops as a character, you have to sort of take that into account when you're doing so. And in this, it seems like Hickman has just decided, like, why not both? Why not all of it? Why not, like, why do I have to pick and choose?
And we still get the Cyclops that I loved growing up that was the leader. The kind of badass leader that took charge. And but now we get to see him with family and kids and
Also, as a note, this is the only time I've liked Cyclops, except for that moment in Grant Morrison's New X-Men where he like nukes the ship with all the horrible mutant experimenty people on it.
I thought you were gonna say when he was drunk and talking to Sebastian Shaw.
I can't imagine a scene with a drunk Cyclops and a Sebastian Shaw that I would have come away with liking, but
no, but. It's a great time to be an X-Men fan. This is the first time I'm actually buying single issues in probably 5 years, five or six years. So, and I'm kind of gobbling it all up.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, yeah, while you were out, you had me send you the codes for all the X-Men books.
For the digital comics
they came out.
So I could keep up with it. Yep.
So obviously you are into it too.
All right. Anna, you want to talk about Gwenpool?
Yeah.
Gwenpool Strikes Back.
I always want to talk about Gwenpool.
Oh, I know.
Have you heard the good news of our Lord and Savior Gwenpool? I think that this book in particular, it's a mini series. It just wrapped up. It's probably going to go to trade sometime in the next couple months. But it is, and I've been reading comics for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
It is one of the only times that I have read a book, especially in the time that I've worked here the past year and a half, where I've thought, this actually has a finger on the pulse of what is funny and what is relevant to popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great book because it's, like, engaging, it's delightful, and not only does it manage to tie into current popular culture that readers might actually be familiar with, it's also directly tied itself into what's happening in Marvel in a timely manner.
Who's writing this? I can't...
Her name is Leah Williams. She's worked on something else recently. She was working on Mary Jane.
Oh, okay.
The Amazing Mary Jane. Which, also humorous, but, like, not quite to the same level that this was.
Yeah, well, with Gwenpool, you can be zany.
Yeah, you can. And like, I think that, I guess, when you know as much about memes, internet memes, as this writer does, like, this is definitely the book for it.
Yeah.
But, like, it's... It would be dismissive of me to say that this book is just goofy. Like, there's a lot of heart to it. Like, at the core, they have been setting up this major conflict, and you see it coming to a head, and then at the last moment, they pull the rug out from under it.
Yeah, because this is essentially supposed to be her end, and it's about her character, who she's always said that she came from the real world, and that's why she knows everything about everyone.
Yeah.
And she is essentially like, I'm not going to have a book. Therefore, I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of sad.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really, really dark to think about, like, having meta-knowledge of comic books and knowing that not having an ongoing book means that you effectively die until the next time you have a book.
So essentially, she was just trying to put her stamp on the Marvel Universe so she doesn't, like, she's not forgotten and she can be used in other things.
Exactly.
So that's why she, unmasks Spider-Man.
Yeah, and... she does, like, a book, like, she tries to kiss Reed Richards. Or
front of Sue.
Yeah, she tries to become Reed and Sue's unicorn.
Yeah.
She unmasks Spider-Man, pisses off Deadpool, just does a ton of stuff. It's very ridiculous. Institutes, like, superhero-wide battle royale between the Avengers and, like, a lot of the younger Marvel characters, and is just hoping to cause as much chaos as possible.
Yeah, because Kamala Khan, and that was, like, leaning on sort of their champ... when Gwenpool showed up in Champions,
And I love that, like, because she is a meta-breaking character, you can have all of these callbacks to the different times that she has existed. Yeah. And in fact, that is how they solve the problem, ultimately, is she pulls in all of the other Gwenpools that have existed throughout all of the other, mini-series that she's had, and then she ties herself into the X-Books at the end of it. It's very humorous.
I will say, I have not read much Gwenpool. I think I read one of the original, like, first issues of her main book.
Yeah.
And it just didn't catch with me, but I did read this entire miniseries because you were like, you have to read this. Somebody please read this.
Somebody please read this.
And it was highly entertaining.
Yeah.
Not only was it humorous and fun, but the art was great. And, I mean, it was fun.
Yeah. And, again, had absolutely no right to tug at my heartstrings the way that it ultimately did, which is what confuses the hell out of me, because I settled into the book like, oh, this is just going to be goofy, this is something that I can pick up and read off the shelf. And then, like, about four issues in, I'm like... emotionally gripped in a way that I did not think was going to possibly happen.
So maybe not quite the same vibe, but Nick, let's talk about Lois Lane.
Yeah, Lois Lane is definitely not pulling at your heartstrings. But it is Greg Rucka and... why am I blanking on the artist's name?
It's Mike Perkins?
It's Mike Perkins, right. And Greg Rucka basically revitalizing Lois as a main character. I mean, she's always a side character and fun. But this is sort of giving her more agency and center stage in the DC universe as kind of not only the badass reporter, but as somebody who grew up under being a general's daughter, because General Lane, Sam Lane, Sam's involvement in sort of like the, you know, espionage kind of world of the DC universe. Mm-hmm. So she's enlisted, like, Renee Montoya as sort of one of her avatars of, like, figuring out shit on the ground. It's just kind of makes her a badass. But also you see her... Rucka does some interesting stuff with relationship between her and Clark and her son. And those scenes always are sort of poignant and kind of hit home runs with how they interact, because it's not, like, the traditional thing. It doesn't feel kind of sappy. It feels realistic and like you're looking in on a couple, having a conversation, even though that person is Superman. So I kind of like... I've always been a fan of seeing superheroes as human beings, like their downtime and things like that. So seeing, like, the best of us still having conversations about, you know, romance and... Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. And... her conversation with her son has just been cool. But then there's, you know, of course, big stories, and they're trying to uncover, like, political corruption. So it's kind of Rucka standing a little bit on a soapbox with, you know, issues, current world that we're, you know, I mean, seeing kind of in the current world. That's right. What Rucka does.
We talked about Lazarus in the last podcast, and it's very similar.
But this is in context of the DC universe, and picking Lois Lane as kind of the avatar of justice is kind of badass. Yeah. And they're doing a great job with it.
All right. Consensus pick here. Let's talk about Faithless, which is a Boom book that just came out as a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Azzarello and Maria Love it. I only read the first couple issues, but I know y'all really enjoyed it, so talk about it.
Well, it's the book that caused me to accidentally say the phrase satanic lesbian erotica in front of a 12-year-old.
This is true.
But,
honestly, having known you for a little while, I'm surprised it's the first time I've used that phrase in front of a child accidentally.
You know, quite frankly, Sam.
Well... Azzarello is, as a writer, is very hit and miss with me. I don't think he connects all the time. And this is one of those rare things where I was just, like, in it from issue one.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of... I mean, it is erotic. I mean, it's about a woman sort of trying to find herself in a world, what that means with different relationships. But it's also...
But also there's demons.
There's also sort of an allegory for Dante's Inferno and sort of the descent into hell.
Yeah.
I mean, I said allegories. I mean, there's straight up a devil in this.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not very allegorical.
So part of this that really worked is the art. The art is really
Art is freaking gorgeous. In fact, it's so gorgeous that I actually picked up basically all, like, I got the main cover and the extra covers as well, like, for the entire time the series ran. Yeah. So I bought the book 12? Twice.
12 issues?
No, it was just 6.
Yeah,
it was...
Oh, just 6, okay.
It might have been 5,
I think it's 5.
Oh, wow. Okay, that was longer than that.
I was going to say, I bought so many covers that my idea of how
Because they
many...
did, like, A-B covers, and sometimes they would do the erotica covers.
Yeah, the bagged erotica cover. Yeah.
A lot of good creators of those covers, too. There are a lot of good people on those covers.
Oh, so good.
So, but you wound up ending well? You liked it?
Yeah. Similarly with Nick... I have a love-hate relationship with Brian Azzarello. I either really, really like his stuff, or I'm fucking appalled by it, and there is no real in-between. And this book, at first, I was, like, leaning towards angry with it, because I was like, oh, ha-ha, comparing lesbians to their relationship with Satan. Very, very progressive.
Yeah.
But, like, as I got into it, I was like, it's not about that, it's not about what it seems to be about.
Right.
It's a lot more, I guess, in-depth and a lot more gray than that.
On the surface, it's about a woman, like... learning about a little bit about magic, but also trying to find her way as an artist.
Yeah.
And then she sort of gets seduced by individuals who are pulling her in maybe not a great way, but there's also an other part that is... So there's religious angles and things like that.
Very, very, very heavy religious angles. But yeah, especially... I don't know. I know we've mentioned the art already, but really that was was what convinced me to keep going in my initial, like, am I going to like this or not?
What kept me going was I never knew what was going to happen.
That too.
I was always like, I finished an issue, I wanted the next issue just so I could see exactly where Azrael was going. And the cool thing is, this is coming back.
Oh yeah, I was going to say he's going to keep going.
This is not just a miniseries. It's going to be, I think, probably a series of miniseries. So... I'm excited to see where Azrael continues to take the book.
And to speak to you saying that you were always looking for the what was going to happen in the next issue, the point that I realized that anything could happen in this book was, I think, at the end of the first issue where she's, like, having sex with someone, and they just turn into a pile of maggots.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah.
Yep.
What's happening? it was shocking. And that kept me coming back, trying to figure out what can possibly top the most ridiculous thing that I have seen in a comic this year.
All right, so we got a couple things that Anna, you and I have read, and I don't know if Nick's read them or not, but these were on your list, and they're things that I can throw in on. Marvel's Conan started this year.
Yeah, on my birthday,
on your
in
birthday.
Fact.
And so there was two main books. There was the book that Jason Aaron was writing with Mahmoud Asrar on art.
Yes. I think so.
And then there's Savage Sword, which is Jerry Dugan and... is it Ron Garney? It's Ron Garney.
Yeah, it's Ron Garney.
Well, it's not just Jerry Dugan. They switched
It was different
artists.
Yeah, that's
five
right.
or six
But that's
issues.
Who started it.
Yeah, but I love Jerry Dugan. He's probably, like, my favorite.
So you were a bigger fan of Savage Sword than the regular Conan book.
Yeah, because it was, like, I don't know, it was so pulpy.
Yeah.
Jason Aaron's Conan was, like, a little polished for me, but, like, Jerry Dugan's Conan is, like, pulling bones out of people's hands and picking locks with them and stuff, and it's, like, it's... right on the line of ridiculousness.
Yeah.
But, like, when you're familiar with Conan, like, that line's a little further than
Conan, as long as he's saying cool stuff, you can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, he could read a phone book, and as long as he then also promised to kill at least half of those people, I'd be in.
And then he also did the Savage Avengers run, which has been kind of fun, too.
Yeah.
Like they've done a good job of bringing Conan back, I think.
For sure. Even though I was extremely hesitant to read a book with Conan and the Punisher in the same room together.
Yes, I get that. I understand. It turned out to work pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
It just narrowly missed my top 10.
Really?
Yeah.
I would not have even thought that it was anywhere near that for you.
Yeah, Savage Avengers was right outside my top 10.
That's awesome.
I love Savage Avengers.
I was going to say, I also loved it. And generally, you and I don't agree on those things, so I was shocked.
But one of the other books we agree on, which I'm behind on, is Crowded from Image.
Oh, it was, like, on the short list for my absolute favorite of the year.
It's so good. Anna, you've never seen Midnight Run, right?
No.
Midnight Run's one of my favorite movies. It's about a bounty hunter having to take this white-collar criminal who's really annoying across from New York to L.A. in, like, 5 days.
Okay.
And Crowded feels like that, because you've got this freelance bounty, this freelance bodyguard.
Yeah.
And this... super annoying woman who just does not understand that she should be in hiding.
Yeah, she doesn't get it.
Yeah.
She's too much of a ditz to not die.
And she's on the run from a crowdsourced assassination where basically it's crowdfunding assassination. She doesn't know why everyone hates her. I don't know if they've ever revealed why everyone hates her so much.
Yeah.
But so many people hate her that she's got, like, this record-breaking crowdfunding, someone go out and kill this woman, you'll get all this money.
Yeah, like, I think she's... At where they are currently, which I'm at the most recent, she's like several $1 million of bounty on her head because so many people are willing to even donate a dollar to get
but
her killed.
It's also the story about those two characters and the relationship they're having, and we start to see deeper story of both characters.
Yeah, it's actually super fascinating the way that's unfolded.
Yeah.
And generally, I'm a little annoyed at times with pacing like that, but it's worked so well in this because it's mixed, like, intermittently with just absurdist comedy.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I, like, somewhere probably around, like, issue 4, I was like, I really hope that these two characters get together. And now I am extremely emotionally invested in their relationship to the point that every time an issue comes out, I'm, like, tweeting the writer, like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So, Yeah, definitely their like relationships as characters are fascinating to watch unfold.
It's a fun world. It's a really good character dynamic, and the art is really good.
Oh, it's amazing. It's very cartoony in a way that I'm totally in love with.
Isn't this the one that Rebel Wilson picked up immediately, about the rights?
Like before the first issue was even out.
Yeah. So it's going to be a movie or a TV show or something.
I think it's a movie.
I think so too.
Honestly, though, I think it would do better as a TV show.
I agree. Then there was Unnatural, which is this strange European romance book from Mirka Andolfo.
Yeah. Well, for starters, I think she did, like, sort of European erotica-ish comics before doing this.
Yeah.
And so the art is, like, beautiful and, like, weirdly sexy, even when she doesn't, I guess, necessarily... I mean, it's always sexy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, at times where you would be like, oh, this person's, like, about to get murdered, there's real life-threatening danger here. It's like, but why is she sexy?
Right.
But anyway, like... The story is effectively about, like, a world where the government is heavily invested in who people marry, whether or not they marry within their species boundary, because I forgot to mention that there are animal people.
Yep.
And if you don't know there are animal people, being asked to marry within your species boundary probably sounds super weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But, the government is just highly controlling of who people are with, who they're allowed to be in love with, to the point that, like... At a certain point in your life, if you haven't chosen a person to marry and have a family with, because you will have a family, so says the government, they will put you through a program where you will be matched with someone who you are not romantically compatible with, but compatible...
genetically and physically compatible.
Yes, with, genetically and physically compatible. There you go.
Which is not... I mean, we've seen this in things like Gattaca and, Brave New World and all this kind of stuff, but... The adding sort of the animal hybrid aspect of it.
Yeah.
Is there actually queer characters or is it just queer coded?
So it's like the whole book is so heavily queer coded that I was actually straight up offended that there weren't gay characters in it at first.
Yeah.
But they do slowly introduce some gay characters and like show you that like this isn't just a metaphor for it. Like there are people who effectively go through this in real life.
Right.
The government does in fact tell a very specific subset of people who they're allowed to be with.
Right.
Or at least attempted to in the past.
Yeah.
And so like it's good to see. That oftentimes, like, in books like this, the metaphor can go over your head if you're not expecting
it.
But this one is just not going to allow that to happen.
Right. Yeah, and then, as it goes on, it introduces this weird sort of, like, destiny and maybe a little bit of magic and...
Yeah, and super weird, like, reincarnation themes.
And I think that's where Dave kind of fell off the book, but I wound up liking it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I haven't finished it yet. Have you finished it?
I have two issues left because I, like, over the holiday, I, like, bought, like, a huge... thing of comics out of my file, and I don't know where they are, and it's killing me.
Oh no!
So, after a certain point, I guess if I can't find my single issues at home, I'm just gonna have to pick up the trade and read it, but, it's definitely, like, I don't know, I think that weird mysticism enhanced the story.
I liked it too, but it definitely felt like a big tone shift.
Oh, definitely, but, like, at the same time, that tone shift, I think, really sets it apart from other things that have come out in the past that are...
Like Gattaca and
There's
no magic in animal hybrids in Brave New World.
No, there are not.
There are not.
Though, maybe they might be better if there were.
Yeah, that's true. I'll call Aldous Huxley of the past and tell him to fix it.
You should. Yeah. Be like, Aldous... furry stuff.
That'll be it. That'll be the message I will send from the future.
He's going to be very confused.
Yes, very confused. And also aroused.
Possibly aroused.
All right. So the last three things we have are things that Nick and I have particularly read, I don't think. But they are some of your favorites. So let's just run them down. Heathen is back, and I know that makes you super happy.
Yeah. That was, I guess, probably... That was, like, the first comic that I picked up here, like, as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd bought comics in the past, but, like, I saw an ad for this, and someone was like, lesbian Vikings. And I was in immediately.
Yeah.
And I came in looking for it, and I can't remember who was working at the time, probably Honor.
Yeah.
Like, basically showed me where it was, and I've been reading it ever since then. In fact, like, that's what got me coming into the store again recently. And so the fact that it is, like, I guess... been deemed profitable enough that they can continue running it has me completely stoked. In fact, I saw it in previews because I was flipping through the previews one day while y'all were in the podcast, and like I was waiting to be like, oh my god, it's back. Because I was so excited. I was brimming with energy.
And then Murder Falcon.
Yeah, another book that, like, I thought was ridiculous when I first picked it up, because, like, the rough premise is this man fights the forces of darkness with the power of metal.
Yeah.
Which is not something that's, like, new. Like, that's a thing that, like, people have been spoofing on forever.
Sure, there was that video game that did that, whatever it was.
Brutal Legend.
Brutal Legend. That one. Yeah.
When I picked this book up, I expected it to be just, like, a goofy romp.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's, like, it blossoms into a story about, like, processing, like, loss and, like, the sickness of a family member and, like, the struggle of, like, I don't want to say when you are the one who is sick, like, carrying the burden that the people around you are walking on eggshells.
Right.
And, like, it really, like, blew me away the depth of the story.
I think the theme I've determined your best of is goofy stories that turn out to have some depth to them.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, when I read a comic book, I want it to be goofy.
Yeah.
And generally, I don't seek to be sad when I read something.
Yeah.
But if a book can manage to pull it off while also still being goofy,
yeah,
like, that's just awesome to me.
Yeah.
That's something that I really enjoy.
And brings us to your last pick, which is West Coast Avengers.
Yeah. The most tragic cancellation of Marvel's. I'm so sad every time I think about it. Because it was definitely my favorite book.
Yeah. It ran 12 issues, right?
It did. It ran 12 issues, though the second arc, you could tell that they, when they started it out, they weren't planning to end it.
And then midway through they had to...
And then midway through they received the notice that it had to end. Yeah,
that's how I felt about Domino.
Yeah, that was another one that was a shortlist for my, or on the shortlist for my pick. But, I don't know, it put together, like, basically so many of my favorite Marvel characters. That had Kate Bishop in it, it had America Chavez in it, someone who I love and have unfortunately just not seen basically since her solo book.
Yeah.
It had Quentin Quire, who thankfully I can see again in the X-Books. He's in X-Force, and Gwenpool, who, and again, another favorite that I talked about already. But those characters, they're sort of like the oddballs. Right now, especially for, like, the younger generation of Marvel readers.
Yeah.
These characters, they don't really have a place in a lot of the mainline continuity, and so seeing them all thrown together in one place, like, over here where they can't do any damage with their chaos, was super fun.
You know what's weird is that I understand why they made them the West Coast Avengers, but it feels like, as you described about the oddballs thing, that was always the Defenders thing. Like, I feel like this should have been the new Defenders.
That's fair. Though, I don't know. Defender has such an epic sound to its name.
That's true.
For you to think about Quentin Quire.
But the Defenders in the Marvel Universe have always been the weird characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would not have been mad about that either.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that sort of seeing Hawkeye as, like, the, I guess, not the team leader, though he is the team leader, but he's, like, the father figure to a bunch of dysfunctional children.
Yeah, he's the poor dad who's like, oh God, why do I have to do this?
And it was great seeing him, like, reference the West Coast Avengers in the other books that were, like, out around that time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that as someone who liked the original West Coast Avengers, you were at least happy to have Hawkeye talking about the West Coast Avengers.
I was not crazy about this because I don't like most of the characters that your favorite characters are not my favorites.
Yeah.
But I do like, for a long time, editor Tom Brevoort has been a diehard no West Coast Avengers. For some reason, there could be 100 Avengers books, but he feels like West Coast Avengers is a bridge too far. And it was one of my favorite comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so having the door open for the concept, at least, makes me happy, even if the book itself did not resonate for me.
Huh. Well, that brings me to, I guess, the thing that, like, weirdly enough, I read no other issues of this series, but I picked it up. I think it was issue 12 of Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah,
the one with Otto as Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because it was during the War of the Realms crossover that happened. It was a crossover with the West Coast Avengers, because Otto and the West Coast Avengers were in the same city.
Right,
like, they were sharing turf. Yeah, San Francisco. And in this book, it's sort of like, I don't know, it was super important for me as a reader to read, because this came at a time where, like, four of my favorite books had just been canceled in the span of, like, 2 months.
Yeah.
And I was, like, really bummed out and super down about it. And there's this great scene, because for the whole issue, Otto has been trying his hardest to be the big hero that he thinks he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't get it. I'm smarter than Peter. Mm-hmm. I'm more efficient at doing Peter's job than Peter is. I'm honestly a better superhero, even if my motivations aren't as pure as his. Why do people like Spider-Man so much more than they like me? I don't get it. And it's, of course, because people don't like douchebags, Otto. Yes. But you can't say that to him. And what instead they say is Gwenpool, weirdly enough bringing more heartstring-tugging wisdom, says something to the tune of, you don't have to be a big superhero to be a hero. Like, these people who are around us that we're saving every time some sort of crisis happens, they may seem like bystanders to you or background characters to the people who are reading our stories, but, like, you're the hero, the ultimate hero in that person's life when you save their life. Like, even if the crowd of people who are reading your book are the smallest crowd of people reading a book, like, you still reached an audience, and because you were important to someone, you are important.
Well, that's interesting. That's a good use of her metal fourth wall breaking, which I don't generally like.
Yeah.
But that's a good way to use it.
And, like, I sort of, like, was just stunned afterwards.
You were like, is this book talking to me?
I was like, is it talking to me personally? And so, weirdly enough, even though I read no other issues of that series, it just happened to hit at such a moment in time that it resonated with me so much so that I remember it now, and that it was possibly even my favorite issue of the year.
If you were Grant Morrison, you would create a 12-issue miniseries based around that moment.
I would. Man, I would like to be Grant Morrison. I'd like to have his money and his platform.
All right. That wraps up our Best of 2019 comics. We hope you all have enjoyed. And we'll be back next week where Dave and Nick and I are going to talk about movies for 2019. And as you know, when the girls did a podcast, they had a separate sign-off.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick, do you know the sign-off?
I don't know if I do, actually.
All right, okay. So
did you never listen to our podcast, Nick?
I listened to half of it.
So you missed the sign-off.
I don't listen to it, and I know the sign-off, and we're going to do that sign-off for this one.
Okay.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
Battle on, Xena! Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.